So that gets to what I'm excited about. For me, it's always the same thing, the unknown. Right now is not good enough. To me, the future presents opportunities. I think the cookie going away, there are certain ways that that could shake out. Like if legislation can keep up with technological advances, or at least understand, the legislators understand the technology and basically how it's doing what it's doing, I see a world where potentially we get back to something called context as an advertising driver. It was a beautiful thing. It worked literally since the beginning of advertising. I think if we were to move back to a world where context was king, and it'll never be the same as it was, right? There's always going to be elements of identity involved. But if we can, the closer we can get to context, the better positioned quality news organizations are going to be in. It's either exciting or terrifying. Take your pick.
Don't you have to kind of choose whether you're going to be excited or scared of it?
It's a decision I make every morning before I get out of bed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Every morning and say, no reason not to be optimistic.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com.
Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. Today we're back. We've got the Local Media Consortium with us. We have the CEO, Fran Willis, and Tobias Bennett, VP of Partnerships and Revenue. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I like that we're kind of making a little focus to try to get around to some of the associations and organizations that support all of the media organizations that are out there, and really we're talking about the people that create Power of Collective, right? So how can we put a bunch of the minds and think people together to make us the best that we can be? Fran, I'm gonna start with you. Just tell us a little bit about how you got to be, because I don't really see people as the LMC is my career goal. but how did you get there? Did you come up through news organizations?
Yes. I actually got my degree in journalism from Mizzou, and I was in marketing and advertising at the beginning of my career. And then, yes, I've worked for media companies in Denver, Dallas, and Atlanta for most of my career, running the digital side of the business and looking at where the new opportunities are for audience and revenue on the digital side.
Were you always on that side after, once you got into the business? Did you start editorial and work your way over to revenue and audience?
I started in marketing. And then when I was in Denver working for the Denver newspaper agency, and this is back in the early 2000s, and my boss came in and said, hey, could you run this little digital division over here? And I said, I don't know anything about digital. He goes, well, nobody does. So, go over there and try to figure it out. So that's how most of us that ended up on the digital side of business started out.
That's always the fun of, you hear those stories, and we were all there in the 90s and early 2000s. We didn't really know what we were doing. It was just, I'm going to go copy somebody's HTML and figure out how to make a website.
It was a lot of trial and error.
Right. And look where we're at now. Tobias, yes. Was yours, did you have the same kind of accidental path?
Accidental, maybe a little bit more circuitous. We did start at the same place, which was journalism school. However, I lasted about a semester once I started to look at the salary ranges of journalists. And so I went after college and had a career that has nothing to do with any of this for about 10 years. And about 15 years ago, I slid over into the local media world, coming in through the bottom at McClatchy in the ad ops department, and kind of relatively quickly working my way up through there into more general digital revenue development roles. One of those pieces was cracking open AdX and taking that out of the box and seeing what that would do for a local news publisher, and did plenty of good and maybe some other things that we didn't anticipate when we first took it out of the box. But that led me to the local media consortium. I guess we were a little ahead of the curve at McClatchy, and the consortium was at the time being spun up with one of the primary goals of really trying to bring along local media publications in the programmatic ecosystem. So we think we've done a pretty good job of that, and now we do all kinds of stuff.
What was it that kind of, I guess, what did you see during that time? Because that was, look, we were all figuring out revenue was totally different, right? As we switched into, started bringing digital, it was just, we couldn't think the same. What was it that kind of caught your attention?
What caught my attention was a couple of things, some humanistic and some business related, right? This was right at the beginning of the, I guess, the coalescing of the country's media companies. And as a human and someone raised by what I think are thoughtful people, the idea of living in a world with a news organization, singular news organization controlling everything, that made me not feel great. And so what I saw is a need for our country. And then two, when it came to technology, I came into digital publishing with no background in print publishing. So I was brand new. And, you know, and so a lot of my job at McClatchy in the early days was talking to folks about, I know you used to do this, but this is what this does. And I know you used to do that way, but now it's way easier and we can do it this way. And so it was really evangelizing efficiency in a world where we knew that revenue was going away in a lot of ways as people moved online and into different areas.
I like that word that you use because I feel like it's important. You evangelize. I feel like that's a lot of what we do.
My first technology at the local media consortium was programmatic champion. Championing programmatic advertising to publishers.
But I mean, you know, we have to, I mean, I joke a lot and say that nobody fought the internet harder than the newspapers did. You know, but I think
we're also the first ones to let them online, though.
That's true. But I, you know, I feel like that's a lot of the job is how can you, you know, how can you get, we'll follow the evangelize theme there. We can get everybody, you know, the choir singing from the same hymnal. And, you know, bring everybody along to embrace and learn these technologies and these things that are our new sources of revenue.
So, you know, a lot of it is, you know, you can get a lot of people to, you know, coalesce around an idea if there's a benefit to it. So, you know, at the LMC, we try to make sure there's some sort of measurable, quantifiable economic benefit. We're either reducing costs or increasing revenue. And, you know, we started back in the day with a contract with Google to reduce everyone's ad serving costs. And it just kind of expanded from Google to now 37 partnerships that encompass a lot of the tools and technology that our members use to, you know, operate their websites and any of their digital properties. And, you know, we've grown from, you know, those humble beginnings with just Google and providing some economic benefit to now we're, you know, over $50 million annually in the benefit we provide our members.
Well, tell me a little bit about how that works. How are you able to leverage these relationships, you know, with Google and so that news organizations then have access to these ad systems?
So it's a lot about scale and leverage. So we're negotiating partnerships. Think of us, you know, a bit as kind of like a group purchasing organization that, you know, we're going to go to a provider. We're going to talk about the scale that we have and see if we can leverage that scale to negotiate better terms than our members could get on our own. And, you know, Toby heads up our partnerships and, you know, can probably expand upon you know, a little bit more detail on how we do that.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? Nobody gives you anything. So we have to be bringing something to the table as an organization, and what we do in that arena for our partners is we're very good at facilitating, and we're very good at bringing efficiency. So as opposed to having to have a conversation with 100 different media companies, you can have a conversation with one organization and get a deal done that's then locked. And we are asking for great terms in our paper, where we're asking for rates that are better than any of our members could get on their own. And so that's that works for some companies. It doesn't work for everybody. And those that it does work for, they find that we save them tremendous amounts of legal fees, business development fees, turnaround times on from sale to close, as well as efficiencies in communication with their current and prospective customers via our webinars and our conference. And there's also an element of, if you get through our process, I guess it is to a certain degree on par with a seal of good housekeeping approval, you know, something along those lines, because we do have a very thorough vet that our team goes through, talk to basically all of your customers, get to know you from your customer's perspective. So yeah, that's kind of how it's done. Every deal is a beautiful, unique snowflake. They're all different. But at the end of the day, we're bringing efficiency, in a couple of areas to those platforms and companies. And for our members, if we're doing our job right, we're bringing them the best technology, at the best possible economic scenario they can find.
What are you looking for when you talk to, you know, when you're talking to the individual properties and trying to, you know, get to know who they are and how they're working with their customers? What are you looking for, I guess, to so that you can make sure their processes are you know, as efficient as possible, and it works within the system so that everybody benefits?
Persuasion is our tool. We can't tell anyone to do anything, right? But we can keep over and over and over again saying, hey, you over there that's doing really well, how are you doing that? In a room full of people who aren't doing it so well. And they keep saying it. And, you know, it takes about 10 times of hearing a new idea for it to make sense. And so a lot of it is just staying on message about certain things. And then, yeah, I don't know, Fran, any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, if one of our members is having success with a certain tool or technology or partner, and they evangelize about it, then it's likely that their peers are going to want to have that same kind of success. So it's like success breeds success. And we, you know, like Toby said, we have webinars and panels and conferences where, you know, our members with our partners get up and share, you know, the kind of benefit that they're getting. And then more and more members connect with partners. In fact, we have, we call her our chief concierge officer.
That's a great title,
isn't it? And she's in charge of connecting our members with our partners, because the more members we have participating with our partnership programs, the more value our members are getting out of the LMC and the more value the partner's getting. So our goal is to make sure that, you know, we're providing benefit on both sides of the equation so that our members and partners have a good experience and they're both, you know, deriving value and benefit from connecting with each other.
I liked what you guys were saying too about, you know, finding the ones that are having success and sharing that. I think that is an underrated benefit for everybody. You know, my old partner used to call it R&D, rob and duplicate, which
it worked in the high school lunchroom for a reason. It's called
right.
It's very simple. Keeping up with the Joneses, any number of phrases you could call it. It's not rocket science though.
No. And I think that's, you know, that's a thing that if there's just somebody, which in this case sounds like you, you know, somebody just kind of paying attention to what everybody's doing and finding the success stories to share.
Yes. And we have lots of working groups and committees. We have committees that represent different member segments. So we have a newspaper committee, radio, TV, community, committee. And then we have working groups that tackle like first party data or ad network or ad ops,
AI,
IT. So we have all these different working groups, and in those working groups, you know, we hear from our members, you know, what categories of technology or partners are their highest priority and who's having success with who. And that's a, you know, we get a lot of feedback and a lot of communication from our members about what we should be pursuing, what's most important to them, and who's having success with it. And it's evolving over time, you know, as technology and trends in the industry change, we're having to, you know, go after different kinds of partners. You know, if you had asked me 7 years ago, do you have a partner in the CTV OTT space? You know, nobody even knew what that was back then. So, you know, we're having to constantly evolve and keep up with kind of what's going on and what the needs of our members are.
How many of those calls now are about AI?
Lately, literally the one we just got off, and quite a few about AI at this point. It's the fun time for me where nobody really knows. That's always my favorite part of a technology coming out, is listening to all of the prognostication and then trying to remember it later to remember who's way off. It's a very interesting spot right now, and it has ramifications. There's no part of digital publishing that isn't impacted by it, from the sales side all the way to the journalism side.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see whether we allow the tools to help us or we allow the tools to drown us.
I think that is perfectly said, I think, because there's so much possibility there, and I don't think we know anything.
Right now, it looks to me just like analysis paralysis, like the beginning of the programmatic world. It was like, there's so many things I could do and I don't understand the implications or the end result of any of them, so I'm just not going to do anything. And that's my worry, because we're in the position we're in right now to a certain degree because of that type of that way of thinking.
Are you, and I didn't really plan on going here, but I'm curious now, just your perspectives as you look at that as an organization that supports media orgs. Are you looking at it more from a perspective of kind of the ethics of, or the practical uses of?
We've got to do both.
Yeah, I was going to say both. You know, we just got off a webinar where we had our legal counsel educating our members about what's going on with privacy legislation and regulation and what they should be thinking about, and some of the lawsuits that are going on and what the implications of those could be. You know, so we're looking at, you know, how do our members make sure they're, you know, being prudent and protected, but we're also looking at what all the incredible opportunities may be in cost efficiencies, like Toby said, cost efficiencies in operations, advertising, the newsroom. You know, who are the partners that are going to be most beneficial to local media organizations? And we're looking at, you know, how can we do partnership programs with them? So it's, you know, it's the buzz
right
across not only the news industry, but everywhere, right? So we have to stay on top of what we, you know, the advice and counsel and also the partnerships we provide for our members.
And I was curious to ask that. We had a few episodes ago, we had a guest who was talking about one of the things they decided for their organizations was that it was just as important to discuss those ethical guidelines at the same time they were discussing the tools and what tools there were available and how they were going to use them. That just, they had to work hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, let's kind of shift a little bit, because I do want to give some time to not only let you brag, but talk a little bit, I think, about what you're excited about, some of the services, you know, maybe not new, but some of the services that you're offering members and what's available to them.
So I'll dive in and give you like a high level view, and then Toby can talk about a couple of the programs that he's heading up. So we have about 37 partners now that, you know, are anything from, you know, consumer privacy compliance to, you know, to advertising partnerships that help with, you know, digital agency services, fulfillment. I mean, there's a wide range of partnerships that our members can take advantage of. And then we also are, you know, we look at what we call strategic initiatives. And we have three of them right now. One is the Branded Content Project that provides training and best practices, as well as content in the branded content space, so that local media companies can work with their local advertisers to generate advertising revenue around branded content, and or it's a resource for them if they need, you know, freelance content creation for a special section or, you know, a website vertical or something like that. So
can I jump in real quick there? Because I think branded content has been a huge conversation for organizations lately. Can you tell a little bit of what that training, you mentioned that there's some training there for what does that kind of involve? And
so branded content is a bit of a different sell. You know, you're yes. talking to an advertiser about, you know, kind of being a thought leader around a certain type of content in their community. So if you're working with a hospital and they have, you know, they specialize in, let's say, you know, active aging or women's health or whatever they want to be the authority on, we can help them create content that they can work with a local hospital to sponsor. And it provides the local hospital with a lot of leadership and engagement in the community. And it provides the local media company with some sponsorship revenue that they may not have been able to get through normal advertising channels. So we train, you know, the sales teams on how to position it and sell it to local advertisers and, you know, just give them the tools that they need to be able to understand it and how to, you know, create value for that kind of sponsorship.
What kind of feedback have you been hearing from organizations as they kind of implement those things?
Well, we service small organizations as well as really large right. organizations on the branded content side of things. And we have some small organizations that have been very successful in their market and are selling hundreds of thousands of dollars of branded content. So it gives, you know, both large and small organizations the opportunity to be able to monetize that kind of advertising strategy.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com.
So, you know, the two things apart from partnerships and revenue, I work two efforts we have called News Next and News Pass ID. News Next is a group we pulled together about 3 years ago as the news of the impending death of the cookie started to trickle out and we started to think about the ramifications and everybody started to freak out. Thought it was a good opportunity to use it as a means to convene some pretty smart people all together and start to talk about this future that we have coming up that I still think we don't have nearly as many answers as we thought we would have at this time 3 years ago. But
can you for us dummies, when you're talking about the death of the cookie, what are you talking about there?
What I'm talking about
how that really affects us.
All right. What's the easiest way to tell that story? All right. You know, the ad that you get for 10 days after you look at a particular product on Amazon or a trip or whatever, like I am still getting targeted with ads for a vacation I took 2 months ago, trying to sell me that vacation. that is possible because of the cookie. The cookie follows you. You go to somebody's website, they drop a little piece of code on your browser, and they follow you around, and they see what you do, and they record it, and then they sell it or whatever with it. It is incredibly privacy unfriendly. And so as a result, you know, Safari, for example, has never allowed cookies in their browser, never allowed it. Right. And so, and for privacy concerns, as it was a big reason why they didn't do it. And so now we are, in a scenario where everybody else is realizing the potential ills of having people's identities just floating around right. in these little digital pieces of code, and they have no control over it. So so the implications across advertising are insane. They come down to your ability to frequency cap a campaign, maybe your ability to trace conversions from a click to a sale. Massive, massive pieces of the value proposition that local media has built into its sales toolkit over the last 15 years are going to be going away. And so the question is, what replaces them? Does anything replace them? If it's replaced, can we do it ourselves? And can we own that? Or do we need tech overlords again? There's so many different questions to be answered, because you can look at all disruption creates opportunity, right? There's opportunity to fail, but there's just as much opportunity to rise above it. And you, one thing I can guarantee is by not thinking about it and by ignoring it, you certainly won't succeed in any kind of new environment. And so we bring together the smartest people we have in our world and from outside of the local media consortium on a very regular basis to talk about all of those things from the various angles that they have. And in those rooms are people from all the largest local media companies in the country.
What are some of those, I guess, where are those conversations focusing right now? Or are there focuses kind of coming up? I guess, you know,
Google at the beginning of the year, Google started pulling 1% of cookies off of their global traffic. So what we're just starting to get now is that first month of data that says, all right, here's the impact that we're starting to see and being able to quantify as a result of this. So that's basically all we've been talking about this week is those numbers that have been coming out and the story that they're telling. And I won't get into that here because I don't think that's my place to get into that, what the story is saying. It's also way too early to tell a story. But yeah, that's, our heads are very much there and trying to understand everything that our publishers can do in order to minimize revenue loss as more and more of the cookies are stripped out, as we try and figure out what the next solution is, if there's going to be one. And there are many people who think there will.
I mean, is that the thing where it's just kind of, there has to be a wait for whatever the next technology is, or the iteration of?
I would imagine there will be a little bit more of asking for forgiveness than asking for permission in trying out some of these new technologies. I think some people take risks, calculated risks, and see if they get away with it.
Yeah, we're exploring, you know, alternative ways of, you know, targeting advertising that is privacy compliant. So that's part of what the working groups are exploring. And, you know, we have our NewsPass ID project that's looking at aggregating all of our local media inventory and figuring out a privacy compliant way that advertisers could actually reach our audiences at scale. So, you know, the one thing that we know about digital advertising and the digital world in general is it's very complex and changing all the time. So we have to just continue experimenting and changing and transitioning as all of it evolves over time.
So, well, and we haven't mentioned the watching how the government changes.
Right. Yeah. There's all of that to keep up with as well. So, you know, I think we talked about the branded content project. We talked about NewsNext and NewsPass ID. The third thing that we are providing our members now is digital on-demand services. But, you know, we love acronyms, so the acronym is DODS. And we're providing fractional outsourced development resources, consulting resources. So if it's a small publisher that doesn't have any development resources, or maybe doesn't have the right development resource, they can come to us. And to Toby's point earlier, we've vetted a bunch of providers and consultants that can help them. So we make those connections for them. And then we're also helping larger media companies with, you know, that long list of projects that are in their pipeline that they can't get to. So we're also providing some outsourced services for some of our larger members as well.
I think an ability to have access to fractional services is huge for organizations of every size, because sometimes it's you don't have that in your staff already, but maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you just need a little bit of help for a while to set things up, or eventually you can outsource a portion of that. But I feel like a lot of times there's a reason not to have it on staff, and you can figure that out and use the collective approach.
Yeah, because you may not need certain developer expertise all the time. You may just need it occasionally. And, you know, so why staff, you know, a certain kind of developer if you don't need them 24/7? So that's what.
And, you know, don't find the marketing person to say, hey, go take over the digital.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, you know, it worked out okay.
Yeah, we learned. We all collectively learned over time.
You've mentioned, you know, that you make efforts, intentional efforts to bring everybody together, as many as you can, for your conferences and retreats. And I kind of want to let you talk a little bit about that's where you get kind of, I think that's where the power of the collective really works, right?
Yeah. So we try to provide thought leadership webinars a couple of times a month. Like the one we just got off of was around AI and privacy. We've got another one coming up talking about, you know, sales strategy in a cookie-less world. So, you know, we try to make sure our webinars are, you know, pertinent to whatever's going on in any given month or year. And then we have all these working groups and committees that we talked about that where there's peer-to-peer idea sharing. And, you know, we get a lot of really valuable recommendations and ideas on how to address some of the concerns coming out of those groups that we can then, you know, utilize our resources to create new programs or find new partnerships that will address those concerns. And, you know, and then we have our annual conference coming up in May. It's a member only conference. It's free to our members. And that's where everybody can get together and, you know, share.
We do allow our partners to come.
Oh, well, yes. But it's, you know, it's not a big, huge industry wide conference. You know, we have we end up having a couple of hundred folks that get together and, you know, we use that time to, you know, talk about not only what's going on now, but what we think. You know, we try to get keynote speakers that talk about what they see coming up and some of the things local media companies need to be thinking about.
Networking is always good, but I think those are also good because it lets you get out of your space, out of your head, and just be able to talk about things and refresh.
You get in a room with a lot of people. These jobs are very specific. And you rarely find yourself in a room full of people who experience the same challenges that you do. And you know, it the same holds true in the virtual environment. It gets a little bit more, I guess, intimate and honest when there's a bar nearby. and folks can have some bit longer conversations that aren't, you know, running between meetings and things like that. So It's great, but all of those, none of what we do at the LMC is possible without the team building that's been done since day one and the building of the community here. I can't imagine there was ever a time where more people at all of these media companies knew each other on a first name basis than right now. And I like to think we have a little bit to do with that.
That's fantastic. Well, I want to, we asked earlier, you know, specific programs, things you were excited about, but I'm always curious. I like to ask people this. What are you excited about in the industry? When you look at our news industry, what are some things that get you excited about the future?
Well, we just did our annual member survey, and there's, you know, some positive findings there, which is all, you know, always great to hear. The majority of our members saw an increase in their digital revenue this past year, and they are forecasting and think they're going to see even more growth in their digital revenue in 2024. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's starting to be more of a balance between consumer revenue and advertising revenue. You know, we started out with advertising revenue and then pivoted over to consumer revenue. And now I think there's, you know, probably a better balance that they're experiencing, where they're getting as many subscriptions as they possibly can in a given market, while also, you know, looking at how they maximize advertising, as opposed to, you know, just being all in on advertising or all in on consumer revenue. There's got to be a balance, because, you know, throughout history, we have always had a balance between the two. And so I think that is, you know, the fact that we're seeing some of our members, or the majority of our members, seeing some success with the growth. And I also heard in some of our committee meetings recently that, you know, there's some profitability going on, which is great to hear. So maybe, you know, in some organizations, it looks like they've figured out the, you know, the right levels of staffing and resources and revenue to achieve profitability, which, you know, has been a bit of a needle in a haystack for several years.
Yeah, I like that you talked about the balance point. I think really the trick is that the balance point keeps moving.
It's always gonna,
right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's important to, I think it's important for us to find some of those things to get, to let ourselves be excited about. And if you, I think as a society, we're you know, we're really great at pointing out the things that suck.
Yeah.
But we don't always let ourselves brag about things.
So that gets to what I'm excited about. For me, it's always the same thing, the unknown. Right now is not good enough. To me, the future presents opportunities. I think the cookie going away, there are certain ways that that could shake out. Like if legislation can keep up with technological advances, or at least understand, the legislators understand the technology and basically how it's doing what it's doing, I see a world where potentially we get back to something called context as an advertising driver. It was a beautiful thing. It worked literally since the beginning of advertising. And in the last 15 years, we've decided it wasn't good enough because we've got all these new bells and whistles. We don't really know how they work, but we're pretty sure they're awesome. And I can see, I
that sounds like me every time there's a new tech tool.
I would like, yeah, I think if we were to move back to a world where context was king, and it'll never be the same as it was, right? There's always going to be elements of identity involved, but if we can, the closer we can get to context, the better positioned, quality news organizations are going to be in, because simply, that it's, I kind of lost my train of thought there. I get real excited sometimes.
But that's a good sign.
Yeah. It's either exciting or terrifying. Take your pick. So,
but don't you kind of have to choose?
What's that?
Don't you have to kind of choose whether you're going to be excited or scared of it?
It's a decision I make every morning before I get out of bed.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Every morning and say no reason not to be optimistic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you do, if you look around, if you look at the surveys or you take some time, whether it's through your organization or others, you'll see that there's people figuring it out. There's people having success, whether it's with branded content, whether it's with newsletters, whether it's with digital advertising, whatever, right? There's people that are making it work and being profitable and sustainable.
accurate information is always going to be valued by people in any community. The mechanism by which that news gets to the people, that will always change over time. But the idea that there will come a day where people don't care what's going on around them, that's the end of humanity, right? So news has to continue. It's about figuring out how it does right now.
Absolutely. Well, Tobias, Fran, if people want to follow along LMC, they want to join LMC, how can they do that?
Well, they can reach out to Toby or I, or they can go to localmediaconsortium.com. We are always open to new members and new partners. We actually have what we call an association membership. So anybody that is a member of Lion, NAHP, Bloom Lab, and a handful of others, we have an alliance with them where their members can actually access some of the services and partnerships that we provide so that we can provide our services to a larger group of publishers, particularly publishers that are smaller and may not be able to, afford a direct membership to the LMC.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, friend Tobias, I appreciate you taking the time today and passing on some of the information about who LMC is and what some of the programs that you're offering.
Yeah, well, we appreciate being on your podcast, and it was a pleasure talking with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you much. That'll wrap us up for this time. We'll talk to everybody next episode.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.